It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Welcome to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, in the FreedomsPhoenix.com studios. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com, here in beautiful Arizona. Well, it's hot, but it's B-E-A beautiful. Now, today we got a great show. Now, let me tell you, just so he doesn't run away, say hi, Mark.
Hi, Mark.
Yeah, you go. Mark J. Victor, criminal defense attorney. Oh, he's a rock star here. He's been busy. We haven't been able to spend a lot of time together here recently, but I tell you, you know, we have so much fun when he's on the show. We've been doing this for a long time, and I'll tell you, it is going to be interesting because Mark was on Fox News last night. You know, now why were you on Fox News? Why do they keep coming to you, man? What makes you so special?
You know, Ernie, I never got the actual full explanation of why on earth my name came up. But what happened was I got a call from a Fox News reporter, and he said, "Hey, Mark, I'm doing a story on whether or not we should legalize marijuana, and somebody mentioned your name as someone who might have something to say about this issue." And I said, "Well, I could probably come up with one or two things to say about this." So that's how the thing got started.
You know, and the one thing that is always, it's entertaining because, and I know why they go to you, because, man, you don't pull any punches. You know, it's just like, let me tell you how it is. And you're in the trenches on this stuff every day.
Yeah, you know, Ernie, you should probably mention, for those people who might be listening who don't know me, but I do criminal defense, and so it's true. I am in the trenches every day, Monday through Friday. I'm in court. I hear the stories of people who come into my office, citizens, mostly good citizens. And you know, Ernie, I'm thinking about writing an article that I'm going to entitle, "Where Have All the Bad Guys Gone?" Because, you know, as a criminal defense attorney, as somebody who represents people in mostly major felony cases, I can tell you at least 80% of the people who I represent, I wouldn't mind if they were living next door to me.
Everybody, you make enough laws, everybody's a criminal.
Everybody's a criminal.
And the one thing that you've been able to accomplish is to make sure that people get a face on this thing, because there's a lot of pain out there, and it's inflicted, and it's from a malicious guy with a shiny badge and a gun that's sitting there telling you just how bad you are and what they're going to do to you. Now, the one thing, you know, get ready. This is what, just a clip out of what happened last night for your entertainment.
Google pulls up plenty of options for people with pot problems.
I mean, compared to some other states, our laws are horrendously tough.
About 40% of Mark J. Victor's cases involve marijuana. This defense lawyer is a former Marine who works out every day, eats organic foods as often as possible, and is a father.
When people say, "Oh, you know, somehow if you don't have little kids, you can't understand." But I have little kids too, so I'm the last guy really who should be arguing to legalize drugs.
He's not arguing drugs are good, but he says end the drug war and end the prosecution of potheads.
Doesn't it make sense to use the rather limited resources that we have right now to go after violent criminals rather than pot smokers? I have never had one case where somebody was smoking marijuana, got high, and beat somebody up. Heard another. It's a joke. Your cameraman's laughing at me because he knows how ridiculous it even sounds.
He was a part-time judge, accused himself from drug cases. He explained his views in writing and says a presiding judge told him if he wouldn't do drug cases, he couldn't be a judge.
Impose things on other human beings that I didn't feel was right, or take off the robe. and I chose to take off the robe, but to his surprise.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Out there, Lunatic Fringe is in here.
You're everywhere, Ernie. Everywhere.
We got Mark J. Victor in here. You know, in that clip, it went right up to the break, and at the end of it, it says, you were like a judge? What was up with that? I remember when that happened. All of a sudden, you're judged for a little bitty bit.
You know, Ernie, I'm upset about that because I don't think the Guinness Book of World Records has contacted me yet to put me in their book for the shortest tenure as a judge before getting fired as a judge. But actually, the truth is I didn't really get fired as a judge. I walked away. And you know the story, Ernie. And by the way, the entire story is on my website, which is www.attorneyforfreedom.com. And, you know, the story is really what I wanted to do was sit on the Court of Appeals and write decisions. And yes, I would be mostly in dissent because I generally pretty pro-freedom, and I take a pro-freedom approach to interpreting things like constitutions and statutes. And to me, that's what America is about. But I wanted to sit on the Court of Appeals, and I applied to be on the Court of Appeals. And basically what I got back, I think informally, was reapply someday, just a little too young. We want you to be a little old. This was many years ago. But I had my entire application ready to go, and the Superior Court was sort of begging for pro tem judges to help on the morning calendar.
Well, what's pro tem? I mean, everybody says that, but I don't even know what it means.
Temporary judge.
All right.
You know, overflow. You know, Ernie, we have so many laws and so many cases. For example, I was in court last week, and I think we had something like 200 matters at 8:30. And I'm not talking about the Justice Court where they have 3,600 traffic hearings set for 8 o'clock as they did this week by accident. I'm talking about intentionally setting roughly 200 matters on the court calendar for 8:30 in the morning. They're just buried with cases. And, you know, they're constantly adding new laws and more police.
Well, what is this pro tem position, though? They just want somebody that, you know, went to law school to sit behind the bench and usher them through and stamp them as the papers as they go by?
Well,
I mean, what is the function?
They want somebody who's experienced in criminal law to get up on the bench and handle the morning calendar. And I was agreeable to do that, actually, to preside over some trials, things that I agreed with. I really didn't want to do morning calendar. And so I applied, and I disclosed on my application that I was on the legal committee for NORML, which is the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, a very good, in my opinion, a very good group, because I didn't want anything to be hidden. But in any event, they said, okay, Mark, you're a pro tem judge, and the Supreme Court in Arizona appointed me to sit on the bench. And I refused sort of jobs, if you will, for many months, until one day they were just sort of begging. They said, look, Mark, court admin called, said, look, Mark, we really need you to come in. We need help. We don't have anyone to cover this guy. I said, okay, fine, but I'm not inclined to do drug cases because I'm just philosophically opposed to punishing people at all. I mean, even putting them on probation for simply doing things to their own bodies. It just seems ridiculous to me, and I'm just not going to enforce unjust laws. And so they said, no problem, just reassign them to another judge. So I went there in the morning, and I went to the other judge in another division. I said, hey, look, I just don't do drug cases, but I'll reassign them to you. And for every one I assign to you, I'll take two back. And the other judge said, no problem, everything's fine. And, you know, I thought that judges should never do things in secret that are hidden from the people. So I drafted up a minute entry, which is also on my website, explaining exactly why I refuse to preside over drug cases. And the long story short, when I attempted to issue that minute entry, it got to the presiding judge, who called me and basically said, look, if you want to continue to be a judge, if you want to continue to have a career as a judge, you're going to preside over drug cases. And I, in essence, said, no, I'm not. I'll take off my robe right now and leave because I'm not doing that. And in essence, he said, well, that's your choice. And so I did. And you may remember, Ernie, that was the day that you were coming to the court
to
harass
man.
Me or whatever. I don't know.
I
but
was going to heckle the crap out of you.
I remember, you know, it was probably not even 10 o'clock. And I called you. And I said, Ernie, don't bother. Turn around.
I was doing a morning show at a Scottsdale, and we were really looking forward to this. You had just started, and what happened was I finished the morning show. I'm in my car. I'm driving to the court, and I get a phone call from Mark, and he says, "Yeah, never mind, man. You don't need to come by. I'm already done." I go, "Wow, that didn't take long." Didn't really surprise me, but I'm like, you know, that didn't take long. And he told me what happened. And the first thing I did is I called a columnist at the Arizona Republic, Derry Matera. And we used to have him on the show every now and then as my weekly communist. But the point, yeah, he's a fun guy. But what happened was, I told him the story. I said, "Oh man, you got to do this." He go, "Oh, I'm all over it." So you guys became friends. You know, he came out, interviewed you, wrote a column about it. It started making the news and so on. Because what the deal that was really interesting about this part was the minute entry that you wrote, and you made it very detailed of why you thought it was, you know, prudent for you to explain why there was a conflict of interest, you know, why you're philosophically against this, and case law and constitution and law. I mean, all this. And I think it was that minute entry that freaked them out.
Oh, there's no doubt about that, that they did not like the fact that my opinion, my humble opinion, was that you do have a right to control your own body. Because, you know, Ernie, at the end of the day, if you don't control your own body, what freedoms do you really have? Everything else, none of it makes sense. I mean, I could give you all the freedom in the world that you could possibly imagine, but if I'm still in charge of controlling your body, you don't really have anything, do you?
And that's the point that you made clearly, and that's what... You know, the one thing that was interesting, there's a couple interesting parts about this. One, it went to the Supreme Court Chief Justice or something. I mean, like that day, I never seen a move that fast.
Actually, it was within an hour. There was a fax that came through on my fax machine that said basically, "You're not a judge anymore,"
and they got him moving. And the other thing was after this, they tried to get you. They wanted to get you.
That's true. To my surprise and shock, even the presiding judge filed a complaint against me. And really the complaint was, well, he did something wrong somewhere, is in essence what the complaint was. And I basically wrote back and said, look, judges have a right to recuse themselves for really any reason or no reason at all. And my reason, I had several reasons, and they were very detailed in the minute entry I wrote. And it was summarily dismissed.
Well, you know, the thing is that, well, they could have got your license.
Yeah.
I mean, they were going after you. And the thing was, though, is that by you making this argument, you provided so much material for a lot of other people. I mean, this was like a resource.
Well, you know, Ernie, it was my hope that at the end of the day, I would be able to refuse to do drug cases and yet still remain a judge. Because if that's, because I know personally from being back in chambers with many judges, not just judges, but prosecutors, they all understand this drug war. Most people understand that the drug war in a cesspool of stupid things that the United States government is doing, this may be the dumbest. And I'm, you know, you could make a lot of good arguments for dumb things going on.
A lot of dumb things.
Yeah, you could talk about, you know, the Obama health plan. You could talk about the war in Iraq. You could talk about, you know, welfare and social security and all these other socialist programs. But the drug war really seems about the dumbest thing that we're doing. And it's excruciatingly, obviously dumb.
Well, I remember over the past, I've known you since 94. Oh, man, we're going on 15 years, man. That's a long damn time.
That's right.
Now, you were right out of law school, you know.
You remember how we met, don't you, Ernie?
Yeah, I do. We'll get into it. He was schooling me. But the thing is that it's nothing more pure than a evangelical born-again libertarian, man.
That's right.
You know, they come at you and just sit there and smile.
Don't you love it when you're being attacked for small government and someone walks up and says you're being too big government?
Yeah, it's what we do here. Now, the one thing that Mark always wanted to do, and you've had some limited success, is that you wanted to debate prosecutors and judges in public. You know, them on.
I still do. In fact, you know, this very...
You did have an opportunity to speak to some judges, though, didn't you?
Oh, I've spoken to many, many judges.
No, I mean as a group when they had...
Well, that's true. I did make a presentation about why I think all drugs, not just marijuana. People seem to get marijuana easier because... You know, the evidence is it's just not dangerous. And not only that, it's not a gateway drug. We just don't have evidence that supports any of that stuff. In fact, There is some evidence coming down now that shows there are health benefits to a certain amount of marijuana, just like there are some health benefits to a certain amount of, you know, red wine. There's some evidence to support this. I don't know whether there is or there isn't, but it's not the point. It's not my argument. My argument is about freedom. My argument is also economics, about the black market, about whether it makes sense to enrich violent criminals, let them make lots of money by selling something in the black market. It just doesn't make sense. And so I was asked to come to a symposium on methamphetamine, and I was one of two defense attorneys that was asked to speak there. And I was the last speaker. After a parade of pictures with people with teeth rotting out of their faces, and here's why meth is dangerous and destroys life, and on and on and on and on, I got up and said, look, meth, as nasty and dangerous and destructive as this drug is, freedom works better. Freedom just works great. And I gave this presentation to judges and prosecutors, and I said, look, you guys are my peers, and if I'm wrong about this, please correct me. Show me where I got it wrong. Tell me why I should not be saying that methamphetamine should be legal. And the room was pretty close to silent. In fact, after we were done, one prosecutor who works at the Attorney General's office came up to me and said, you know what, Mark, you changed my mind. I now agree with you that we should legalize all this stuff and get it out of the black market.
Because they know what they're up against. When we come back, I wanted to talk about this one thing. We had Chris Simcox. He's Minuteman guy running for U.S. Senate against John McCain. He was in here a couple of days ago. And he made a proposal that, well, you know, all we need to do to fix this, we got to close off the border. That'll stop the supply. And then we're going to take the military from overseas, bring it here, and we'll just go kick the crap out of all these drug cartels while they're still making billions of dollars on the black market. But he thinks that was the way to go. We're going to go kick their butt. We have the resources. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about that, do we? How would that work? Well, we'll talk about it here on Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, and as always, independence declaring kind of guy, Mark J. Victor. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
The Workaholic.
Yeah, that's Mark, the workaholic, man. You never catch this guy. You got to go camp out in his driveway, you know. And that's one thing. You know, you've been really open about this stuff. You know, we've been doing this for a long time. There's a couple of issues you'd rather not talk about. But, you know, the thing is that you haven't been shy about this drug war thing.
You know, and people shouldn't be shy. There are a few things that bother me more than the number of influential people who understand this stuff, who agree with this stuff, who are just too wimpy to come out and speak the truth. Case in point, Ernie, I happened to be on a debate panel recently on an unrelated issue to the drug war. And usually when I show up and do any kind of an event, I bring some props and paraphernalia and Mark J. Victor law firm things with me. Well, one of the things that I brought with me was my article on why we should end the drug war. I entitled it, I don't know why this gets anybody excited, Ernie, but I entitled it, legalize methamphetamine.
You know, I got to tell people about this article. It's on the internet. You just put legalized methamphetamine, you know, and it just blows up everywhere. It's been republished everywhere. And what we did is we had printed up thousands of copies of this article along with some of the other stuff. You know, like what to do at a traffic stop, you know, carrying concealed, you know, that kind of stuff. And what happens is we have some here left still, and whenever we have an event or whatever, we always pull that one out because, man, it gets them going. And in some cases, they're like, during the Ron Paul Revolution thing, are you sure you want to put this one out? Yes! Yes! You have to argue it from a philosophical standpoint, because then they always say, okay, well, marijuana, then it's okay. You know, that one's okay.
That misses the point. When you get legalization of methamphetamine, then you understand the freedom argument. Then you understand the economics of what's going on.
And before you get to your story here, one of the other things is that I'm really, really wanting to make people understand that there is a consistent core base principle for everything that we do. They all can, one thing, one issue, one stance, it does not conflict with another one. And that's the difference. You know, politicians are always sticking their finger in the air, you know, seeing which way the wind's blowing. They have no idea. You know, you don't know what they're going to say about an issue. You always know what we're going to say. Reporters call us already wrote the quote and say, is this okay?
Ernie, wasn't that the most frustrating thing for you personally before you became a libertarian? I don't know if you're Republican or Democrat, but you know, you would sit down and think, okay, well, what do we believe on this issue? Okay, on this issue we believe X, and on this issue we believe Y, and it really wasn't clear why we were X on this issue and why we were Y on the other issue, because there really wasn't anything that tied
them. We're waiting for the bullet points from Fox or something.
Right, to figure out what the heck we believed. And then all of a sudden, we kind of got it, right? And there's so many different ways to say it, like how you say it. There are those of us who want to be left alone. And then there are the other group who just won't leave them alone.
It's right? Not more complicated than that. So you're at this function. You have – what was the function? What were you doing?
Well, the issue was whether people who are gay are born that way or whether it's a choice that they make.
Now, what would a libertarian say?
What the heck difference does it make? Who cares?
Am I allowed not to care? I just don't care.
I mean, there might be a sort of biological, social, psychological value to it. But in terms of what the law ought to be, what people's rights ought to be, there is scarcely anything I could think of that is less relevant than whether somebody chooses to be gay or whether somebody is born to be gay. But you know what, Ernie? The answer is they're born gay. I mean, who the heck would choose to be gay, especially in our society where gays are just hated by so many people and unfortunately hated by so many people. Nobody would choose that.
And the point is how should someone be treated under the law?
Right, and of course it doesn't matter at all. I mean, maybe there's some people who choose to be gay, good for them. It really doesn't matter to me.
So you're putting out your methamphetamine articles there.
Yeah, it's as good a time as any to drop the
wine. We did thousands at ASU before, man. That's, you know, this has always got an impact, and it's always been positive. You know, people are like, dang it, made my brain hurt.
Ernie,
I want to
just tell you something. I was in court. I carry this article with me. Every time I'm in court, I've got that article with me because, you know, I may get into some scuffle with somebody. I might not have the time to explain, so I want to hand them the argument. Well, I got into this little thing with a prosecutor the last couple of weeks, and I said, hey, why don't you read my article? And the prosecutor said, okay, and pulled out my article and saw the title was legalized methamphetamine. So I'm not reading this. I already disagree. I said, well, no, just read it and then tell me what you disagree. No, I'm not reading this. I said, just read it. Just do me a favor. And I'm not reading this article. I disagree, and that's that. I said, but you don't even know what I'm saying. I don't care. That was the reaction. That's pretty much the reaction I get from many prosecutors. So in any event, I'm at this event, and I'm talking about this issue of who cares whether gay people are born gay or choose to be gay. And I go back to my office, and I have this voicemail message on my phone from a state legislator here in Arizona who says, Mark, I just want to tell you I was at this function. I picked up your article. I read it. I have always been somebody who supported the drug war, but I read that article. My mind is totally changed. Not only that, please email me a copy of this article because I want to send it to everybody in the state legislature. And so I was excited at this point, but then he dropped on me pretty much what I've heard a billion times before. But I just don't think the people are quite ready for this argument
because
yet.
What are legislators? None of these guys are, oh, we need good leaders. We need to elect good leaders. They're followers.
It's not about what's right. It's not about what's best.
It's what you make them do.
It's about what's going to get me reelected. That's what matters.
You know, and they're weak of mind. I mean, they're weak of character. You know, these guys, I learned this early on in the 90s when I first started, you know, getting politically active. And I wasn't even really active. I was just trying to help my father, you know, get access to some data that was supposed to be free anyway. You know, it was taxpayer accumulated data for trade and it doesn't matter. But what happened was, as I realized after meeting these guys, they're bad.
They're not weak of character, Ernie. They're devoid of character.
Devoid of character. We're not here on Declare Your Independence. We'll be right back with some more great information on the drug war. We'll be right back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, we're back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Marcus J. Victor. How you doing, Mark?
Ernie, who sings this song?
Aerosmith.
Where are they from?
Boston.
Hello. Hello.
Mr. You know what, Boston Ernie? Over
Let
here.
Let me tell you what, Mr. Declare Your Independence. When are you going to come to my hometown in Boston and pay your respects to the founder of the Sons of Liberty, Sam Adams?
Ah.
Every time I go to Boston, I go to visit Mr. Adams, founder of the Sons of Liberty. Remember their glory days? Chucking the tea overboard. That king, he's going to put a 2% tax on tea on us. We're never going to put up with that. Never.
You know, this is you know, Boston. There was a book I read. It was a biography of Paul Revere.
And had those were our people, Ernie, yeah, right there.
You know, as a matter of fact, it was in the mid-90s. June Baudette gave me that book, and I read that, and I recognized everybody, all the these founders in there. I recognized, I go, there's Mark, there's me, there's Mike, there's, you know, I go, and all these characters, you know, keep recurring throughout history, and it's a character trait.
What would they think today, Ernie? What would they think today? Sam Adams comes back.
WTF, mate. I mean, what the heck?
Would you be ashamed to even tell them what has happened to the great efforts they have put forth in declaring independence from the crown?
You know, that's one thing, you know, on this network, you know, I get in, you know, make them think a little bit, you know, that the Declaration of Independence doesn't have a whole lot to do with the Constitution. You know, the Constitution is in the plantation they created.
No, actually, George Smith, who is very well read on these issues, in fact, did lectures to the Cato Institute on American history for many years. He saw the current U.S. Constitution, which happened many years later, 1789, I think, as a counter-revolution to the American Revolution. I mean, this was really a big power grab for the Federalists because, you know, there was this huge, you know, in law school, Ernie, you get this all this reading about the Federalist Papers, and what you don't get, unless you go to Southwestern and you have Professor Butler Schaefer, hardcore libertarian, and that might be an understatement, he brings forth the equally large body of literature called the Anti-Federalist Papers, where you learn about things like, you know, that saying, I smell a rat?
Yeah, no, no.
That was about the Constitution.
Yeah, it was Patrick Henry or something going, hey, yes, man, I smell a rat.
It was worse than a rat. It was a skunk.
And what happened was, is the Federalist and Anti-Federalist Papers, that was the discussion in the newspapers of the day. It was like the email flame war.
Yeah, people think that maybe what happened with the Constitution, everybody got together, had a big love fest, and lit candles and pat each other on the back, and let's have this wonderful Constitution. That was not what happened. This thing was a bitterly fought battle. And the Anti-Federalists said, look, you think you're going to give this kind of power to a strong central government, and they're just going to be good about protecting our liberties? Are you crazy?
Yeah, let's have the 10 thou shalt nots of government.
Wow.
You know, this Bill of Rights thing, you know, it kind of held them off for, I don't know, a few days. But
but you know, Ernie, I host a discussion group at my home, and we started talking about some things that we're optimistic about. And actually, I think there's some cause for optimism. And one of the things, just sort of to tie it back to today's show, there's a lot going on, of course, none of it for the right reasons, but there's a lot going on in terms of maybe this drug war has gone a little too far. Maybe we should legalize some of this stuff. Now, of course, the focus of the discussion is, oh my God, we can't cut spending and we don't have enough money to keep this whole thing floating. So let's legalize marijuana and tax it. Now, of course, this is not the right argument.
Your support of Normal, and we have the local Normal chapter has come down here and had a meeting before. I wanted them to see the facility and so on, but I don't want it to be the honeycomb hideout. I mean, I won't let anybody else do it, much less a bunch of heads coming down here.
You know, Ernie, I spoke.
But the thing, this is my point, and we'll talk about your speech to them. That was very interesting. Yeah, you were late for my daughter's wedding because of that, you slacker.
That's right.
But yeah, we gave you a pass.
I'm sorry about that, Ernie. No, I feel bad about it.
You were doing good work. Now, the thing is that Normal, all of a sudden, the bloom has fell off the rose when they start coming out instead of making the argument for it's your body. And all of a sudden, they're going, oh, we need to raise money for the man.
You know, it comes back to the same old thing. People really have a hard time deciphering this is what I want in versus this is what's best for everybody, because this is the part about freedom people don't like. Everybody's for freedom, right? Everybody loves freedom.
Oh, Hillary's for freedom.
Everybody's for freedom. But they only are for freedom so long as other people use their freedom in ways that we 100% totally agree with. The second somebody wants to use their freedom, do something with their lives, their money, their property that you don't quite like, Now we got a problem. And so when I was asked to come speak to the local Normal chapter, I knew anything I said about legalizing marijuana was going to go over just fine. So I stood there in front of the microphone and I said, who thinks we should legalize marijuana for people who are in terrible medical conditions, who marijuana might ease their pain? Yay! Everybody got excited and cheered. And then I said, but who thinks that we should go a step further and we should legalize marijuana for Americans who just enjoy smoking marijuana? And the place erupted. I was so excited, everybody was. And then I said, now, who thinks we should legalize methamphetamine? You could hear a pin drop. There were a couple libertarians in the back of the room who were excited and were making more noise than their numbers, for sure, as libertarians often do. But the room was silent. And I said, you know what? That's why I'm here today, because it's about freedom. It's not about whether you want to smoke meth, and you damn well should not use meth because it's going to destroy your life. But it's not my life. It's your life, and you can use or abuse your body as you see fit.
But you might do something wrong.
You might. That's part of life.
And then?
You might screw up your whole life.
Yeah, but it might affect me.
Well, you know, I get this argument all the time, Ernie. This is the argument that, well, you know, this is why we should have people who ride motorcycles forced to wear helmets. Because, see, when they fall down and get a head injury, I don't want to have to pay for their mistake. And, of course, I'm very sympathetic to that argument. My response is, why on earth would anybody think in a free country that one person would have a right to reach into the pocket, reach into the wallet of another person to force them to solve their problems for them? It just doesn't make sense to me.
Our entire society has been built on that now.
Yeah, what's so hard
about... It's
falling
apart, though.
Ernie, what is so hard about understanding that in a free country... I mean, and I'm talking about a real free country. You're free to live your life however the heck you want to live your life. And I'm free to live my life however the heck I want to live my life.
No. I want the ring. I want to control you.
And if you interfere with my life, we got a problem.
You got to do what I say.
Right. That's what it is. We're in a big commune here. It's like we got a big babysitter called the government. And, of course, the government, we know the state
legislature. Yeah, but he's my babysitter for you.
Right. They know how to live their lives, and they know how to spend our money much better than we do. And, you know, we're moving in exactly the wrong direction. But I think there's good news, because they do say sometimes it is darkest right before the dawn.
Yeah, it's pretty damn dark,
man. It's pretty dark. I mean,
it can get darker, but it's pretty dark. I mean, you're having to put on your military night goggles.
Yeah, I mean, at least it seemed as if George Bush was at least pretending to have some kind of respect for a capitalist system, even though he was a complete socialist. Obama doesn't even seem to have that, let's pretend we're going to be capitalist. He sort of has more of a notion of, well, of course we're a socialist nation. Of course we should take more from the most productive people in our country and reward those who are not productive with the productive people's money.
And my friends get a cut.
Oh, of course. That goes without saying. There's always a large transaction cost for government. Nothing's free, right?
Large transaction cost. That's a good way of putting it, man. You know, your news piece that you had on Fox last night, there was a group called TASC, T-A-S-C. And I see that logo around a lot. They always have something to do with drug treatment or whatever. And, of course, she's making the case, I've seen marijuana destroy lives. It's bad. You shouldn't do it. And when people get off marijuana, they're so much more clear-headed and they function better and they're great and wonderful human beings and, you know, whatever. So I'm, you know, wondering... What's the role that they play? Where'd they come from? Why do they get interviewed? Who are they?
Well, you know, first of all, TASC, they're this private company who has a contract with the government to provide treatment, Ernie. And if we weren't on the radio, people would see me putting that treatment in quotes. Because, you know, if she says, I've seen so many lives destroyed by marijuana, I doubt it. I really do. I mean, I've represented thousands of people in marijuana cases over the last 15 years that I've done nothing but criminal defense work. And it's just not the case. I mean, you may find one or two people who really are out of control using marijuana. They smoke every day to the detriment of other things going on in their lives. You may find one or two of those. There's no doubt about that. But to say that there are some great numbers of people who are ruining their lives with marijuana, it's just not the case. But what I would say is this. The problems that we have so many cases with marijuana in Arizona here, but the reason we have cases is not because people are doing bad things when they're using marijuana. The reason we have so many marijuana cases is because they're charged with things like having it, growing it, transporting it, selling it, those types of things. And so when somebody gets busted for, let's just say, selling marijuana, they're going to wind up going into some drug counseling program like TASC very often. And so that goes down on the TASC rolls as, oh, another person in need of marijuana counseling, when the truth is they don't need any marijuana counseling at all. It's something that we pretend that they need. And this is in my view, this is a racket to continually send these people through the TASC system. And, you know, then to ask the TASC lady whether she thinks we should legalize and end her company's mission is so
ridiculous.
I mean, you know, and I would say, like I did say, and most of it didn't come through in that story. I mean, if anybody ought to be against this drug war or in favor of this drug war, it really should be me, because I make more money off the drug war than everybody except the drug dealers. Okay, there's nobody in the system that's working in favor of the drug war who makes more money off the drug war than I do. Okay, I don't have any axe to grind. I'm not a drug user. I'm a healthy guy. I go to the gym. I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm at the gym by 5 every day, with the exception of Saturday and Sunday where I go at 6. And so I don't have any axe to grind in terms of, well, I want this stuff to be legal so I can go use. And then, of course, the irrelevant argument that I hear all the time, well, you know, kids, and you must not have kids. And no, I got 3 little kids of my own, and of course I don't want them using drugs. So, I mean, I should be the first person who should say, let's
continue.
Which
is all the more reason it needs to be decriminalized so that the profit is gone from them pushing it on our children.
That's right. Do I really want my kids someday to have to make a choice, to be approached by some thug who says, hey, look, drive this car from Arizona to, you know, Pittsburgh or something and make $50,000 cash? Do I really want them being pressured by some bad guy with a gun to use it, to sell it, to transport it, to make all kinds of money? Do I really want to enrich these thugs who are out there dealing drugs? And by the way, in fairness, they're really not all thugs. And I've represented countless drug dealers. Lots of them are just businessmen, and they understand this stuff perfectly fine. And I talk to them about it all the time. I say, Mr. Nice Drug Dealer, you know, and I may actually use their real name when we're in the privacy of my office, but for your radio show, I'll just say, Mr. Nice Drug Dealer, what do you think about legalizing drugs? You know, lots of times they're not even drug users, but they're businessmen, and they know the second it's legal, they're completely out of business.
No, it brings up a good point. A couple days ago, we had Chris Simcox in. He's running for U.S. Senate against McCain. And you probably know him as the Minuteman guy, the protect the border, blah, 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 you know, and that's where his claim to fame was. And now he's running against McCain. And on the drug issue, he's very open about this. He goes, you know, we use our military. Yeah, bring him back from overseas, and we'll use our military, and we'll go after these drug cartels. We'll go into Los Angeles. We'll root them out. Okay, we're going to close, you know, defend the border. No more illegal drugs coming in. We're going to close off the border. We can do this. If we put resources in there, we're going to stop drug trafficking, and then we're going to take the military, and we're going to go and beat the snot out of these guys. And my thought, of course, is, Chris, if you're not taking away the billions to trillions of dollars that go in the profits of the drug trade, you're going to be going up against the armies that are now taking over Mexico. You start trying to shut down the drug cartels, they take over the government, they take on your military, they beat the living crap, turn your entire country into a war zone, and that's what's going to happen here if you do this. Because there are more than enough, you know, easy pick them off the street guys. They'll sit there and hold an AK-47 for some money, you know, and that's going to happen. So, and it's so much easier to just turn off the spigot.
Well, you know, Ernie, probably the last part of his discussion, I wasn't here and I didn't hear it, but I'd be willing to bet that, you know, while we've got the military patrolling the streets and we've got the border shut down and we've got absolutely no rights at all, after while we're doing all that, we should stand up and rejoice about how we're the freest country on the earth. And he'll see absolutely nothing, no contradiction whatsoever. You know, that's a brings up another point. You know, it's kind of embarrassing to me already that we call ourselves the land of the free. Can we really be the land of the free while we lead the rest of the planet Earth in incarceration rates? I mean, we incarcerate more people in the United States as a percentage of our population, not raw numbers, not by, and of course we do lead that as well too, but not just saying, well, we're a big country, we got more people in prison. No, as a percentage of our population, we put more people in prison than any other country on the face of the earth. How can we possibly be the land of the free?
You know, on O'Reilly, we just had a story on Freedom's Phoenix today on Bill O'Reilly. He had, you know, it's got the good-looking young two blonde bimbos up there going, oh, drugs are bad. Amsterdam is a cesspool of blah, 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 blah. It's terrible. It's corrupt. It's all this stuff about Amsterdam. And Amsterdam's sitting there going, really? You've been to Amsterdam. And there was somebody put up a video going, right, we have one-fifth the murder rate that the U.S. does. We have much more, all these statistics of how great and wonderful they are and how bad we are. And the whole point was, is that, you know, oh, really, was oh, lying.
You know, I was not too long ago on the Charles Goyette show. And Charles was crafty because, you know, Joe Arpaio really is afraid to debate me in person on the drug war. I would love to debate him one-on-one.
Hey, he was DEA.
Yeah, I would even, of course, if he's so right in his position, I don't know why he's so afraid to debate me on the drug war. But in any event, Charles Goyette was crafty enough to schedule my appearance on his show right up against Joe Arpaio's appearance on the show. And so we were able to talk for a little bit in the hall, and I was, you know, hassling him a little bit. And he says to me, you know, talking right over me, so I couldn't hear a thing I was saying, but he says, I bet you're one of these guys who thinks Amsterdam's okay, and you probably never been to Amsterdam, and I've been to Amsterdam, and don't you know, you are going to fall and trip over all the junkies laying at the front of these coffee shops if you want to go inside. It's such a mess over there, on and on and on and on.
You go, I was just there.
Well, you know, I one of the reasons I like to go to Amsterdam so much is because as a criminal defense attorney, as a student of all these things, as somebody who likes to talk to the local police and the local people there, I like to ask questions, and I go there. And I just got back 2 weeks ago from my third trip to Amsterdam, and just the long and short of it is, they're just lying about what's going on in Amsterdam.
Of course they are. You know, we'll talk. There was a good story you had about criminal activity selling drugs late at night.
Oh, yes, good story.
We'll talk about that when we come back here and Declare Your Independence in just a little bit.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Each and every day, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. with me, Ernest Hancock, here at the beautiful FreedomsPhoenix.com studios in Phoenix, Arizona. We're in with Mark J. Victor, criminal defense attorney, and a good friend of mine for a long time. And we've been fighting battles. You know, we each have, you know, our specialties. You know, it's always good to have Mark there. You know, I can be a little bit more creative and kind of push the edge a little bit just to make sure that there's somebody there at least going to, you know, ask if I went to Guantanamo or not.
Yeah. Ernie, remember the time you were going to make a statement about not being allowed to take your gun into the Department of Revenue and you were going to bring your gun and wave it around? I said, maybe that's not a good idea.
Yeah, let's do it a different way. But it worked out better. We did a civil action against the state. And what happened was we got a lot of things changed. And we did it in such a way, I did a special action straight to the Supreme Court. And that's another long story. And it worked out better. And I'm probably healthier for it. But so you got to have Mark around, man. He goes, well, let me tell you what they're going to do. They're combined disorderly conduct. You're going to have a firearm on your hip. They're going to make that a felony because you have it. And I go, you know, that's a good point. We should do these things. Now, the one thing we were talking about your trips to Amsterdam, and it's just nice to go for libertarians to go to a free country. You know, I mean, whether you're going to be smoking marijuana or not is not even the point. You know, it'd be legal. But, you know, the thing is just, can I just go experience some freedom a little bit?
You know, Ernie, in a way, it's really nice, and you're right, it is nice, but in a way, it's embarrassing and it's frustrating too, because I got attitude. You know, I'm an American. I want to feel like, hey, I'm in the land of the free. I'm an American. I live in a free country, the freest in the world. Then you get to Amsterdam and you find out that, you know what? They have a whole group of freedoms that we're not even close to over there. In fact, the entire attitude of the people over there is very, very pro-freedom in a lot of ways. It's true, we've got some freedoms that they don't have, but they certainly have lots of freedoms that we don't have, and it's nice to just sort of see them in action. And on my third trip to Amsterdam, which concluded a couple of weeks ago, I did something that I have done this the second time now, which I'm walking around in the red light district. And it's interesting. I had almost exactly the same experience two times now. I'm walking around in the red light district, and it's late at night. Of course, it's always late when you're walking around because it's much later there than here. It's probably about 8 hours different. So, you know, you're up at 3 a.m. and you're walking around. And it's, you know, by the way, perfectly safe. I've never had any problem. I'm not saying there are no problems there, but walking around in the red light district where prostitution is completely legal, where there are sex shows for adults, where there are sex museums, where there is legalization of marijuana, and everybody's smoking marijuana who wants to, you're walking around here, no problems at all. None at 3 a.m. And so anyways, I get approached by this guy in the red light district, and he says, hey, man, you know, do you want to buy some cocaine? Do you want to buy some, you know, heroin? I think he may have asked. And strangely enough, he asked me, do you want to buy some Viagra? Because you can get Viagra over there in the black market. And so I said, no. And then he said, would you like to buy some marijuana? And I went back to him and I said, why would I buy marijuana from you? And he said, ah, the coffee shops have to close at 1 o'clock in the morning. And so after 1 o'clock, a black market crops up in Amsterdam just for the period of time where it's illegal to sell. Isn't that interesting?
You know, see, it always gets filled. You know, a black market will always fill whatever the government says you can't have.
Yeah, and we know this, Ernie. Isn't it obvious? I mean, did we see this in our country with alcohol? Remember, we had that roughly 10-year period where the government passed a constitutional amendment, i.e.
Well, back when they used to think they had to do such things.
Yeah, I was just going to make that point. They passed a constitutional amendment, said no alcohol. Did that end alcohol use in our country? Heck no. It was the best thing that ever happened to organized crime since the war on drugs.
And that's exactly what we're dealing with now. We're dealing with a mafia that is worldwide, and it's diverse, and it's not going away until we end this prohibition. We'll talk about it more here on Declare Your Independence in just a little bit.